and my wife would be talking and chit-chatting till past 2 a.m., 3 a.m. I had to take them sometime to the ship to go and see while we were in Nigeria.
Hey, hello and welcome. This is another edition of the program Life at Sea. My name is Hope Orivre, and today our guest is Engineer Emmanuel Emisiri. He'll be sharing with us his own Life at Sea experience. Engineer Emisiri, you're welcome on the program.
Thank you very much.
So share with us a Life at Sea experience, something very spectacular that comes to mind anytime you remember your sea life.
Well, all I can say is that what comes to my mind is the fact that I lost my wife in the year 2000, and by the time she died, we had not, out of our 13 to 14 years of marriage, we had not spent 3 to 4 years day in, day out together as husband and wife. So I think that's the major thing. It's like occupational hazard, being away. The moment I was deciding to settle down so that we can live together, that was the moment she died.
So how were you coping, and how was she coping for those years? You were away and she was with your children, and how was it in your relationship with your children?
Yes, when I was away, because of my distance, I had to get a nighter line for the house so as to be calling them anywhere I am within the country or outside the country. Well, as for the children, before then, even when I come back on those voyages to the house, me and my wife will be talking and chit-chatting till past 2 a.m., 3 a.m. as if I'm going the following day.
To make up all
these lost times, and sometimes that the one that happened. You're not going. I said, that's it. For the kids, it's like, Daddy, what did you bring for us? Welcome back. I hope you're not leaving soon. You know, kind of nostalgic feelings and all that. So I think that was just it about those early times. But along the line, the kids got okay. As they were growing up, I had to take them sometime to the ship to go and see while we were in Nigeria, when my vessel is in Nigeria, to go and see how the ship life is, where their father works, and those kind of things.
Okay, while at sea for those times, were you often worried about family, or while at sea, it was sea until it was time to go back home?
See, most of the time when I left the country for outside contracts, my biggest worry is the family back home. And that is the motivating factor. In all that you do, in all that I was doing, is remember you have to go back. Remember you are here for the benefit of those at home. So that being that, you will not do anything that will get you into trouble or create a problem for your person and the company or the ship in any form. So you are guided by the fact that you came here away from your country on a long journey, and then you're going back home. So what have you got to show your family? So that was one part of the guiding principles when you're outside the country, leaving your family behind.
Okay, so what things can you easily recall as memorable times while at sea?
Yeah, I think the most memorable time is what comes to mind regularly is the fact that three of my girls, I wasn't around when they were giving birth. My third girl, Ejira, was in New York when she was born. And then Ufuma, I was away entirely. It was for Ejiro, neighbors in my place then had to take my wife to the hospital for her to deliver in Lagos Island. And then for Ufuma, I wasn't around, and Jite wasn't around either. Even for Ima, my last boy, I was in Australia when Ima was born.
So did you have to do anything special to make up for not being there while they were born?
Okay. Now the funny thing is, when I came back, after a year, I came back to Nigeria and met Ejiro, my third girl, born when I wasn't in the town, when I was in the country, sorry. When I got into my house, I opened my arms like to welcome my daughter. She crawled into my arms gladly. It almost brought me to tears. It's like, this is somebody you've not seen from birth. How come the person enters the house and you are? Naturally, most kids will want to run away first, so they get scared or they cry. I think just came crawling.
The connection was there.
That's it. That's natural. That's it. From then, I started calling her Angel. So all these kids, they have their peculiarities. Point still remains that in all of them, anytime I travel out, I have to keep buying things for them. Like, I remember even my late wife, I remember that same trip that I was away for over a year, I bought things worth almost $3,000. And the funny thing is, when I brought them to Nigeria, she was saying, why did you have to buy all this? You could have brought the money and I will sew some blah, blah. But each time she puts on the clothes and gets to the office, her friends will say, this is beautiful, this is nice, this is, and she starts saying, my husband bought it up. She comes home to tell me and say, this is mission accomplished. So that's it. That's the sense of it. So for most of the time, even the items we use in the house were imported. From their kiddies' dress. My first girl, my first daughter, her baby food, I have to buy SMA from Liverpool. You see, the point I'm trying to bring in here is, if this system had continued, where this Nigerian shipping system, shipping line or whatever has continued, most seamen would not have had their children in this country. We would have, on our own, sent our children outside. We don't know. Maybe contrary to what God's will is for these children, but often the case, like I say, parents are the cause of most of children's problems, because then we'll have had the means, we'll be wanting to send them abroad to go to school.
Okay.
So,
you've talked so much about family connectivity as a seaman and how much it shaped your sea life. For us on this program, we like those who have advanced, who've gone through sea life, to give top three key notes that younger seafarers should take to heart and run with. What are those from you?
Yeah, I think that the first one is for a seafarer. Let me start this way. Some seafarers are in the wrong position. Some of them are not supposed to be at sea, either by desire or parental pressure or obligation. They have to find themselves at sea. So what I'm bringing up here is that for those who are naturally inclined to doing the sea job, you see, you first of all have to adapt to the situation where you find yourself. In adapting to the situation, you have to understand that you must align yourself to that aspect of the sea job that you can fit in. In my case, for example, when I was interviewed for the Maritime Academy in Oran as Pioneer Academy, with the questions the interviewing officers were asking me, the answer I was giving them, they were saying that I should do navigation, so become a deck officer. And I told them, sir, with due respect, I think engineering is good for me. So if I cannot be given admission for engineering, let me just forget the whole thing. So why am I bringing all this? There's that natural inclination to your occupation so that you can always cope. For people in that nature, they cope with every situation. There's nothing that will make them start saying, I wish I had. I wish I'm not here. But at the same time, you still have some occupational hazard. Those who are in the wrong place, they always create hazard for those on board. Accidents here and there because of that, whatever. Anyway, so with that in mind, once you find yourself coping in that environment, you should be able to concentrate on the fact that, look, this is a profession. And not only a profession, it's an international profession. You're not limited to Nigeria or whatever, because as a seaman, you can work anywhere. And then you come across different people and different cultures and others. So with this in mind, you must try to improve on yourself and make sure that you can fit in under any situation. Because come to think of it, as a seaman, our training is such that it's far-reaching. I can do carpentry work, I can do bricklaying work, I can do plumbing work. So what's more? So if you understand all this, you know that you are very versatile. So for you to be able to cope, you must realize that in what you are doing, the bottom line is self, not necessarily self-improvement, but self-emancipation. And it's an opportunity for you to actually prove yourself that yes, you are capable of doing this. And with that in mind, your driving force still remains one thing, the discipline. You must be disciplined in that profession for you to get the best. Some people, they get carried away with the financial gains of it to the detriment of their chosen profession or career. So I think what I would advise the young seafarers is, first and foremost, focus on your environment. While you are there, what's your objective? And while you are there too, be cautious of the fact that the sea is always there. The ships, they come and go, but the important thing is, what are you gaining? What are you benefiting from that environment so that you can continue in it? So with this in mind, you realize that you have a sense of focus on board at any time too. And that sense of focus centers primarily on one thing, safety. Safety of yourself and safety of others. Because your action can affect others. That's why in the Navy you say we sink and sail together. You know, so there's no way your action cannot impact on the other seafarers. So be very careful of your actions as per any man on board. And one thing we always warn about sea is that when the seas come, that's when we are cautious. So we should not take things for granted because the seas come. Because the next minute, anything can go wrong, caught on our ways. So let them be alert and aware of their situation and the environment. That's what I would advise them. So other gains will come in later.
Thank you so much, Engineer Nisiri, for taking time to share life at sea experience with us. So much to do with the family, and I think it's actually a good one.